Hello, and welcome to Baltic Ways, a podcast bringing you interviews and insights from the world of Baltic studies. I'm your host, Dr. Indra Ekmanis. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Marek Dam, a professor of cultural history at Tallinn University and the head of the Center of Excellence in Intercultural Studies. We're speaking with Dr. Dam about his wide range of interests, from how cultural memory has shaped Estonia as a nation and partner, to how we might gamify Livonia's cultural heritage, and all the way into the future of history, interspecies and interplanetary history, and why he thinks historians should rethink the concept of linear time. Stay tuned. Dr. Dam, it's so nice to have you on Baltic Ways. Thank you for joining me. Perhaps we could start and you can tell us just a bit about yourself and your work.
Yeah, thank you for having me in your podcast. I was born and raised in Tallinn, in Estonia, and I studied history and semiotics at University of Tartu in the mid-90s, and then moved to Paris to continue with my MA studies at the École des Hautes Études en Sciences Sociales, in medieval studies more specifically. And then I earned my PhD degree from Tallinn University with a dissertation on medieval representations of the Baltic Sea area. And ever since, I've been working at the University of Tallinn. I am currently a full professor of cultural history at the School of Humanities of Tallinn University. I also am head of the Center of Excellence in Intercultural Studies and was elected last year to the Estonian Academy of Sciences. And I have quite a great variety of research interests. As I mentioned, I was formed as a medievalist, and medieval studies is still one of my main research foci, especially the medieval history of Livonia, of current days Latvia and Estonia. But I've also been, from the beginning, interested in the theoretical and methodological questions of historical research. So I developed an interest in theory and methodology of history. And I mentioned also that I studied semiotics at the University of Tartu, and I still have strong interest in semiotics, and in particular, in the tradition of Tartu Moscow School of Semiotics, meaning the work of Yuri Lotman and of cultural semiotics. So I've tried to elaborate something I call the semiotics of history. And also another field of interest for me has been the cultural memory studies and the discussion of relations between history and memory. And now for the last decade or so, I'm also being involved in digital humanities and in digital history more specifically. So these are my main, let's say, fields of interest. And I have to admit, I never conceived myself as a scholar of Baltic studies, but I have to admit that a lot of my research actually is geographically located within the Baltic area, in the sense of Estonia and Latvia, but also in the sense of the Baltic Sea region as such. So that's for a brief introduction.
Well, great. You mentioned your interest in cultural history, so maybe we can start there as an entrance into the Baltic Sea region space too. And perhaps you can tell us a little bit about your work on Estonia and how the Estonian cultural memory has been shaped.
Yeah, by the way, a difference between cultural history and the study of cultural memory. And cultural memory is an important part of cultural history. In terms of my research, yes, I've been interested in exploring the importance of cultural memory in Estonian nation building. What do Estonians remember of the past? What they do prefer to remember? What they prefer to forget? What are the main sort of motives or themes in Estonian memory? And one of my arguments have been that Estonian national identity is built on the narrative template I call fight for freedom. And this narrative is structuring most of the Estonian cultural memory since the early medieval times. We have been a constant fight for freedom, for independence. And of course, historically speaking, it's not very accurate, but on the level of historical memory, it works very well. And I think it's not that different, for instance, of Latvian cultural memory, this idea of a small nation fighting for the freedom against the foreign forces. And also, I've been interested in the role of literature in Estonian culture memory. What role have played the major historical novels in constructing the Estonian historical memory? And my argument is that actually novelists have had a great impact on the way you remember Estonian past than historians. Quite often, historians follow the general, let's say, patterns established by a novelist, for instance, emphasizing the importance of this or that historical event or this or that historical person. So I believe indeed that it is important in order to understand Estonian society today, even Estonian foreign policy or Estonian relations with other countries, it's important to understand what Estonians consider important of the past, what kind of historical traumas are still, you know, vivid and important. And for instance, the fact that Estonia is kind of desperately looking for friends, for allies, for being as connected with the rest of the world as possible is very much shaped by this historical experience, the kind of mnemonic experience of being alone in face of some foreign invasions or foreign enemies. So that's briefly my interest in the cultural memory of Estonia.
Yeah, you bring it briefly into this kind of contemporary aspect as well. And I wonder how you see that history shaping Estonia's response and reaction to this moment in time, especially around the war in Ukraine, which seems to have some parallels too.
Yeah, definitely, the Estonians' behavior in this recent Ukrainian war is deeply shaped by our historical experience, but not only historical experience again, but also by these kind of ways of remembering, especially in terms of the 20th century experiences. These experiences are very much traumatic, related to different occupations. And this experience of being alone, being without any help and without any allies. And I think in the Ukrainian case, we want to compensate in a way this experience of being alone, and we want to be a close ally to Ukraine to provide our help. But also because we understand that being the member of a great geopolitical power like Russia, it is critical to be very cooperative with other neighboring countries and to form a sort of unified counter power to the geopolitical ambitions of the big neighbor.
Yeah, absolutely. You also talk a little bit about the digitalization of historical culture and of heritage, digitalization of heritage. And I'm interested to hear a little bit more about that, especially with the, you know, Estonia having this moniker of the e-Estonia and this digital native nation.
Yes, I believe that this recent emergence of the new digital condition, as I would call it, has a major impact on our notion of history, on our relations with the past. And my central argument is that our relations with the past are increasingly digitally mediated, meaning that we learn from the past via different digital forms of history writing or of historical culture. And I think this is a great challenge because history over the last couple of centuries has been mostly historiography, meaning it has been written. It exists in the form of texts and article books, but also in the form of oral texts, in lectures and talks and radio shows, etc. But now we are witnessing this digitization of our relations with the past. Of course, in the form of films and digital photos, but increasingly also in the form of digital history games. And I can see already from my encounter with my students that we have a new generation who has a different relationship with the past because it is much more immersive, much more sort of intense, much more even emotional, affective, because these digital mediations of the past appeal to different, you know, senses and are more, much more interactive than our traditional forms of historical mediation in the forms of texts, for instance. So this is, yeah, my recent interest to explore what happens with the history, with our notion of history, with historical representations at the time of this new digital condition. And yeah, we're trying to analyze from historians' perspective the role of these digital games and to what extent we have to, you know, introduce these new digital techniques into historical scholarship and into history teaching. But then, of course, my second interest in relation to this topic is more specific, more traditional. I also believe that this digitization shapes our access to sources, provides us new analytical tools, how to interpret these sources. So, for instance, I'm currently running a 5-year research project funded by Estonian Research Council called Digital Livonia for a digitally enhanced study of medieval Livonia. And the project has two main aims. On the one hand, we want to make digitally available as many sources about Livonian history as possible, meaning digitizing, you know, different medieval manuscripts and books and other forms of information. But then on the other hand, we want also to apply new tools, new analytic tools to make sense of this digitized data, to implement different network study tools and also different tools of visualization, and etc. So I believe that also in terms of practical historical research, we are witnessing major transformations, major changes. And I believe that also history as a field of research will change quite dramatically in the coming decades. So these are, yes, my, let's say, two main interests in this particular field.
Yeah, it strikes me that this digitalization of history or heritage and how we interact both as researchers, but also as the public is quite interesting, right? This gamification, right, of history opens it up in broad way to people who might not be willing to sit in a library and, you know, page through a large text. In this digital Livonia, what are some of the, perhaps products is not the right word, but outputs of that?
Yeah, it's still on its early phase, but we hope to launch very soon, let's say in early 2023, a new digital platform, which will be bilingual, Estonian English, called Digital Livonia. And on this platform, we hope to make available quite a lot of different digitized materials. On the one hand, original sources, as I mentioned, but also digitized historical source editions, mostly from 19th century and early 20th century. And make these sources, you know, searchable and analyzable as best as we can. But then also main products of the project will be different databases. So we are currently building different databases. For instance, we try to have a database on the clerics of medieval Livonia, kind of prosopographic database, all the names, dates, every information we have about the clerics of the clergy in medieval Livonia. Then also we are preparing a database on the members of Teutonic Order in Livonia. Then we have a major database about the inhabitants of medieval Tallinn. Because in Tallinn we have this unique Tallinn city archives, a lot of information about medieval inhabitants of Tallinn. And we hope to have this kind of prosopographic database. But then also we have a database on books in medieval Livonia. So we have information about all preserved books, but also books mentioned as secondary sources and books that only fragments are preserved. and so on and so forth. In total, we are building more than 10 different databases and hope that these databases will be important source or resource for all medievalists interested in the history of medieval Livonia.
Wow, that is such a wonderful resource to create and to be involved in. What an exciting project for you. But another project that I think is quite exciting for you is your upcoming book, The Fabric of Historical Time. Perhaps you can tell us a little bit about that.
This project is part of my interest in the theory of history and historiography, and this it is co-written with a Hungarian colleague, Zoltán Boldizsár Simon. It's a short book for Cambridge University Press about the fabric of historical time, in the sense that we try to provide new insights into this concept of historical time. And the key argument of the book is that we need to pluralize this concept in the sense of having this modernist idea of a single, linear, unified historical time. We need a kind of idea of multiple historical times, so multiple historical temporalities. And this is, again, theoretically very challenging, because all history research is based on this idea of linear, unified time. When we accept the idea that there is not one time, but many times in at the same time, that there is a plurality of times, then what should we do as historians? Because historical research is very often by explaining, by contextualization, by situating things in particular temporal or historical context. But if you argue that there is not one single temporal context, but many of different temporal contexts, then we are faced with different, you know, theoretical, conceptual, methodological issues. And so the book aims, yes, to cover these different issues and provide some insights how to overcome these challenges. And of course, the book is directly related to contemporary discussions about the technological and ecological changes. At the time of the Anthropocene, we have to situate the human time in a much, you know, complex set of times. We should probably give up this traditional distinction between natural time and historical time, natural history and human history. And also we have to cope with a much larger time scales. Normally history is about, you know, a few recent thousands of years, but maybe we should include also geological time and explore different life forms on the planet, not only human life. And then also in terms of technology, I mean, the different new tools allow us to understand fundamental differences between the speed of time and between nanoseconds till these large geological times. So we are truly in redefining what time means for us. And I think it's also very important in the context of historical research.
Yeah, certainly. And that is such a large concept to bring into just a few words. But can you speak a little bit more about this idea of like future-oriented history and how we can conceive of that?
I believe that one of the changes in our contemporary temporal orientation is the new meaning of the future. Because we have had, since last couple of centuries, very straightforward idea of future. It's like a promising land that we are moving toward a better future. The same linear concept of time, that we'll end up in a better future. But now I think we are faced with different future scenarios, and some of them are very, you know, negative or even apocalyptic. We are worried about the extinction of species. We are worried about the climate change. We are worried about different, you know, major geological challenges that humanity is currently facing. So the future is not so positive anymore, at least for a certain number of people. And then on the other hand, we have different technological future visions about singularity, about transhumanism, about, you know, joining humans and artificial intelligence and all kind of making human a multiplanetary species and So these are very challenging future scenarios, basically arguing that the humans, as we know them, will not exist in the future or in a different shape as a kind of cyborgs or whatever. So my question is that when we are faced with this very, you know, different futures, what kind of impact it has on our notion of the past? Because I claim that the concept of the past and the concept of future are very closely connected, even intermingled. We cannot think about the past without thinking of the future and vice versa. So when our idea of the future is changing, I claim that also our idea of the past is changing, that the past depends on our idea of the future. So I've been kind of speculating in one of my recent articles about how the past would look like seen from the future. That's why I make an argument, for instance, that we probably will have to develop kind of multi-species history, because when in the future, our relations with other forms of life will be redefined for the sake of our survival. We cannot remain the lords of this planet in the old way, because otherwise we might get extinguished. So we might want to reorient the focus of history and not have only the human history, anthropocentric history, but also history that includes other forms of life. And we could call it the multi-species history. The question is whether only humans have history, or whether also other forms of life have history. And if yes, why do not we study this history? But then on the other hand, just to give you a very few random examples, when we believe that in the future there will be some sort of cyborg organisms, or that humans will travel out to the space and conquer different planets like Mars or others, then maybe we should also start rethinking our past in terms of including non-humans in our history, different, machines and different tools that we have used so far. And also maybe we should, expand our idea of history into multiplanetary history. Why do we believe that history is only about life on the planet Earth? So these are very, challenging, very speculative ideas. But I think it's very, inspiring to think about this, and this helps us to remind also that our understanding of history is very much dependent on our understanding of the future.
Wow! So in the space of about 25 minutes, we have gone from medieval Livonia through the digitalization of cultural heritage all the way into the future and multiplanetary history and how that impacts our past. What a great span of research. I thank you for sharing it with us.
Yeah, thank you for asking. Thank you. And hope to see you in real life one day.
Thank you for tuning in to Baltic Ways, a podcast from the Association for the Advancement of Baltic Studies, produced in partnership with the Baltic Initiative at the Foreign Policy Research Institute. I'm your host, Dr. Imre Ekmanis. To find out more about Dr. Tung's varied research, click on the link in our episode show notes. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the policies or positions of AABS or FPRI. Subscribe to our newsletters at aabs-balticstudies.org and fpri.org/baltic-initiative for more from the world of Baltic studies. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.